Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run.
And welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army Podcast. Thanks very much for tuning in.
We are the boys who will make you think again.
In a moment, we'll catch up on all of the latest Dad's Army news.
Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done.
We'll then have a rifle through our mailbag and read out some emails that some of you have been good enough to send us. And that's before I'm joined by Claire, who this week sits in for Tony when we discuss the 2.5 feathers.
Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
Well, hello there, and welcome to podcast number 24. Now, first up, I am going to start by apologising to all of you who have emailed me in complaining about the sound quality of podcast 23. I don't actually think it was particularly poor compared to some of our early podcasts, but when you listen to some of our more recent ones, then I think, yes, it does suffer. I'm still having trouble with Skype, which is a voice over the internet piece of software that allows me to record Tony. Well, there's no Tony this podcast, I'm afraid, so you've just got me, but I hope the sound quality is slightly better. Anyway, this week we've got some rather interesting news with the sequel to Dad's Army. Now, did you know there was a sequel to Dad's Army? Now, this is news to me as well, actually. It's called It Sticks Out Half a Mile. It's a radio version only, and there are only 13 episodes, or 13 full episodes. I'll explain that in a little bit. And it's currently being broadcast on Radio 7. Now, these plays, I understand, are well worth a listen. I think it's universally accepted throughout Dad's Army fandom that it's not a patch on Dad's Army, but it does have a couple of the original characters in. It's got Ian Lavender as Pike, Bill Pertwee as Hodges, and John Lemessurier as, well, it's not Sergeant Wilson, it's Arthur Wilson. And I think I'll let the chap from BBC 7 explain it a little bit more, because he can do it better than me.
Now then, Dad's Army's off the air at the moment, but for the next few weeks we're going to catch up with one or two favourite characters in the spin-off called It Sticks Out Half a Mile. After the pilot we heard last week, Arthur Lowe was due to star in this series as well as the retired Miss de Mannering, but sadly he died shortly after that pilot episode was recorded. But the series went ahead with Sergeant Wilson as the manager of the local bank. It's 1948, hostilities have ended, and we find ourselves just along the coast from Warmington-on-Sea in a town with a landmark that's causing one or two problems.
Now, I only heard this audio for the very first time when it was broadcast on Radio 7 last week, and unfortunately I missed the pilot episode that the guy referred to in the clip that I've just played. But the remainder of the series, which is 13 episodes, started being broadcast on BBC 7 last Tuesday. Oh, that's probably two Tuesdays ago by the time you get to listen to this. And the first episode was called The Business Proposition.
There you are, Frank.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Hodges. I must say I was ever so surprised to hear from you again, of all people.
Ah, it's just a friendly gesture.
Your gestures weren't very friendly in the Home Guard days. When you were the chief warden, Captain Mannering used to say that he couldn't make up his mind who he hated the most, you or Herr Hitler.
He always did have a sense of humour.
I don't think he was joking. I don't think he liked you at all. Especially when you used to call him Napoleon and the rest of us hooligans.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. How long is it now?
How long is what now?
How long is it since those days at Warmington?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, war's been over nearly 3 years now, hasn't it?
There you are, then. That's all in the past. Here, you sure you don't want anything stronger than that orange squash?
Oh, no, thank you, no. I never touch alcohol at lunchtime. It makes me go all silly during the afternoon. Oh, did you bring me a straw?
Yes. So you're working at Woolies now?
That's right, yes. After Mr. Mannering retired from the bank at Warmington, and Uncle Arthur was offered the chance of becoming manager over here at the Framborne branch, Mum decided we might as well have a change of scenery as well.
Oh, so you and your mum moved over here?
That's right.
Now, I deliberately haven't chosen a really hilarious part of that episode, and there are actually a number of moments where I laughed quite unexpectedly. But I wanted to show that there's a different kind of interaction between the characters in this play. One, because obviously it's a radio show, so a lot of the interaction between the characters has to be dialogue-based, which, as many of you know, I've mentioned in the past, is why I like the radio plays of Dad's Army so much. But Hodge's character is slightly softened, and I'm not entirely certain whether it's changed so much from the Hodges and the Warden that we know from Dad's Army, but I think because he's taken out of a wartime setting, he's given a little bit more depth to the character of Hodges, and I think he still portrays a very believable Warden Hodges, even though he's not a warden anymore. I would strongly recommend that you listen to at least the first episode of this sequel. If you've missed the Listen Again service on the BBC 7 website, which you would have done at least for the first episode, then you should be able to get this from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society library. Now, the library itself is free to use. I think you need to pay a small contribution to package and posting, but provided you're a member of the Appreciation Society, there's a wealth of audio and visual material that you can borrow, and you can find out more by going to their website www.dadsarmy.co.uk. And perhaps, if you do take a listen to the first episode, you could email me your thoughts and tell me what you thought about this spin-off, james@dadsarmypodcast.com.
Have you logged on to the Perry and Croft Forum yet? Well, if you are a fan of Jimmy Perry and David Croft's programmes and you haven't taken a look, then you are missing out. But don't panic. You can still join the thriving online community who discuss every conceivable aspect of Dad's Army, Urang the Lord, Heidi High and many others at perryandcroft.co.uk and click on the link to the forum.
The summer 2008 edition of Permission to Speak, Sir has been published and sent to all of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society's members. That's the official society's magazine that's sent out four times a year. It's always a good magazine, and there's a number of articles this time around that's worth mentioning. There's complete coverage of the Perry and Croft weekends that was held back earlier in May. Some great photographs. The cover has actually got a photograph of Frank Williams on the locations tour that we reported on podcast number 21. Inside, there's some written articles about the weekends from one of the Society's members, Tony Pritchard. There's also an article on Caroline Dowdeswell. Now, she's a particularly interesting actress. She played Janet King in the first series. And there's not only a piece that's been written by Colin Sanders, there's also an extract that appeared from a book called The Complete A to Z of Dad's Army, where somebody interviewed Caroline. And it's a really good double-page spread, well worth having a read. There's also a feature that talks about Arnold Ridley's war. Now, we spoke a few podcasts ago about an email Nicholas Ridley sent us. Now, that was following our discussion of Branded, and this article reproduces the information Nicholas sent the podcast, so if you actually want to read about it, it takes up a whole page of the magazine, and it's really interesting stuff, and it shows the real depth and variety and sheer unpredictability, I think, of Arnold Ridley's life. It chronicles his involvement in World War I all the way through that war and talks about how he was invalided out. We've started a new poll here at the podcast. There's been many polls on the Whispers from Warmington forum and also on the Perry and Croft forum that don't generally get very many votes at all. We're lucky if we get four or five people actually casting their vote. However, we've had a completely different run of fortune on the Dad's Army podcast blog. We've clocked up a high number of people casting votes in the polls that we've run in the past, and this is your chance to actually cast your vote for your favourite Series 1 episode. Now, we're really interested in these particular episodes because I think they're the least watched. The first two series, I believe, are the least watched by Dad's Army fans themselves, so it'll be really interesting to find out what people think of these early episodes and whether there is a standout episode that people really think about when they consider Series 1 and 2 in the black and white episodes. So you can head over to the blog. It's www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. You don't need to register, you don't need to leave your details, you can just select your favourite episode and then you can move on. However, you can also take part in the other polls that we've got going on. We have a continually open poll for your favourite character, and James Beck's Private Walker is streets ahead there. So if you do happen to like another character more than Walker, then head over to the blog and make sure you cast your vote on that poll as well. We've got Bressingham photographs, we've got location photographs, We've got news articles on there that we haven't necessarily been able to incorporate into the podcast. There are videos on there. Oh, there's a wealth of Dad's Army material, so do head over to it, dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. Busy on those emails again, which is fantastic news. First email I'm going to read to you is from Derek Vlasek from America. I hope I'm saying your surname correctly, Derek. Dear James and Tony, I've been meaning to write to you for quite some time and I apologise that I'm just getting around to it now. I found your podcast early on when you'd only done 3 or 4 episodes and have listened faithfully ever since. Well, that's really heartening, Derek, to find out that some people listen to our early podcasts and actually stuck with us. I hope the most recent ones are a little bit more, well, I hesitate to use the word professional, but perhaps not quite as amateur as the original ones were. I live in the United States where, sadly, Dad's Army is a rare commodity as the BBC does not sell the DVDs in Region 1 format. I'm sure that's only a matter of time, though, Derek. There is a company that sells a Region 1 collection of 3 DVDs that is a sort of best of from all of the colour seasons. I also managed to acquire a copy of the official series 1 and 2 that someone with the right technology was able to transfer from Region 2 to Region 1 for me. Therefore, I feel really fortunate that most of your podcasts have been on episodes which I have actually seen. I mean, sure, Derek, it's really bad that you haven't been able to see many of the episodes of Dad's Army, but if you flip that around, you can think, well, my God, I've got so many episodes that I haven't seen yet, and I long ago saw the complete set of Dad's Army, and I have to find an episode that I haven't seen for a very long time to try and recreate that feeling of you get when you see Dad's Army for the first time. Anyway, Derek continues, I was somewhat surprised that The Test is one of the episodes in my best of collection, as it did not strike me as particularly amusing. I was gratified to hear you had a similar opinion. Yeah, The Test was a weird one. It was a particularly British episode as well, and I don't think it portrays cricket in the best light. Now, I'm not a big cricket fan by any means. I personally find cricket quite boring, but I'm probably digressing slightly here. But I mentioned on the last podcast, I think, that I've been to see a 2020 game, and that, I think, is almost trying to introduce a baseball element into cricket here, which I'm not sure whether or not it really works, but it's been very successful throughout the UK. Anyway, I'll carry on, Derek, talking about Dad's Army rather than sport. I hope someday you can do a discussion on Fallen Idol. That particular episode made me laugh more than any other I've seen. I like that episode as well. I'm not completely convinced by the ending of it. I was actually at one of the locations used in Fallen Idol a few weeks ago, and if you go onto our blog, I've given you the details earlier on, you can see a photograph that I took actually standing next to the power station or the sub-power station where the ending of that episode was recorded. Derek concludes, keep up the good work and I look forward to the next podcast. Well, hope you're enjoying it, Derek.
Have you taken a look at the new James Beck tribute site? If not, then don't let Walker be lonely anymore and head on over to www.myspace.com/JamesBeck29.
Gary from Melbourne in Australia has also been in touch and he says, hi James, long time listener and enjoyed the episode. I think that was referring to a recent podcast. You mentioned towards the end that there are only 6 reviews on iTunes. That must be your UK iTunes. Here in Australia, there is only 1 review. Well, fantastic. I believe that iTunes was international. I didn't realise that reviews were only visible in the country that they're posted. Anyway, it gave me an opportunity to find a new review. It was from a chap called G. K-Stas, that's his login name anyway, I'd hope that's not his real name, and he says, although amateur, an excellent and entertaining podcast about an all-time great comedy, well done Tony and James, doing a great job, and he gives us 5 stars, which is most generous. So if you do happen to listen to us via iTunes, then please leave us a review. I've talked about this in the past, so I won't go on too long, but the more reviews we get, the more listeners we attract, and the more successful the podcast becomes.
Have you you've known Mr. Clark for some time?
Aye, sir, I have that.
Would you say he was a man of integrity?
Aye, sir, and very generous too. He bought me several drinks in the bar of the Anchor last Thursday night.
When did you say you first met Mr. Clark?
In the bar of the Anchor last Thursday night.
Yes. Well, Mr. Clark, perhaps you'd like to tell us something about yourself.
Yes, sir. Well, as you so shrewdly guess, sir, I've been a regular soldier all my life. I retired about 10 years ago, and I came to live in Warmington only a few weeks ago.
When did you first join the army?
Oh, back in 1897, sir. And a year later, I served under General Kitchener at the Battle of Omdurman.
Gracious, sir, what a coincidence.
Yes, indeed. Jones was up in London for the reunion dinner only last night. You didn't by any chance come across the Lance Corporal Jones, did you?
Oh, there were thousands of men in that battle, sir. You can't expect me to remember that.
No, of course, I was only joking. What regiment were you in?
The Warwickshire, sir.
Wasn't Jones in the Warwickshire regiment, sir?
Yes, he was, Wilson.
Hold on, sir. As a matter of fact, come to think of it, I do remember one Jones. He was always just that bit behind everyone else with his drill.
That was a clip from the season 4 episode, The Two and a Half Feathers. I'm joined again by Claire. Welcome, Claire, back to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Okay, this time, The Two and a Half Feathers, slightly different episode to the one that we discussed last time.
Very much so. I mean, I'm feeling on dodgy ground because I've only got the one to compare it to, but yes, very different.
Well, the previous one, just in case listeners hadn't heard that, was The Enemy Within the Gates, which was a season one episode, and the series had changed quite considerably, I think, even by series four.
Well, I mean, from the very beginning, obviously there's very obvious things like the Two and a Half Feathers was in colour. Fair enough, that's mm-hmm. how things were. But no pictures in the opening credits of the cast up to things. And that for me, immediately, was not as good as the start of Enemy Within the Gates.
There was 12 episodes in black and white, and each of the black and white episodes had the newsreel at the beginning. Sometimes original footage, sometimes mock footage. But that disappeared when with season 3, the very first episode in season 3. Oh. So yes, and it did change the way things started a little bit. And a lot of the colour episodes started with a parade ground scene, which this episode doesn't. This episode starts, I believe it's referred to in the script as the British restaurant. So, and I must ask you to start with, and this isn't really directly related to Dad's Army, but what's a snook? Do you know what a snook is?
I'm not entirely sure. Our guess was it was some sort of fish.
It's got to be a cheap fish, presumably. Yeah. One that wasn't so difficult to get hold of during wartime.
If anybody does know, I'd be really fascinated to find out.
I think that's probably the strangest request. Send us in an email about what kind of fish a snook is. But yes, wonderful. So it starts off in the queue. And even then, Mannerin is still trying to assert his authority.
The class war is alive and kicking. What I really liked about that was he was trying to assert his authority and failing, but the dinner lady was able to assert hers against the... What did she say? The bourgeois? She says it at the end.
Oh, she said something... capitalist lackey, I think.
Capitalist lackey, that's it. Yes.
No, she does. That actress is in a number of episodes, so it's varying different characters. And what I found interesting there is she made mincemeat of Wilson.
Yes.
And most of the time, with Mannering striving to be upper class and failing, Wilson nearly always wins, but he didn't stand a chance against
him. Exactly. She can deal with him, but Mannering can't, and I thought that was really interesting.
Mm.
And also in that sort of section where Mannering is called a teddy bear of the episode, flushing up with pride, and then sadly Walker comes along and all his best efforts
it changes completely. And again, that's a slight turnaround, because it's usually Wilson who has the luck with the ladies, and he didn't really work this time. The actress you referred to there, who played Doreen, was actually Gilda Perry. I'm not sure whether I'm saying Gilda correctly, it could be Gilda, but that's Jimmy Perry's wife.
I keep it in the family.
Yes, it seems to have done.
I mean, I think that was, in general in the episode, that was one positive. I want to start with the positives. That was one really, for me, positive thing I noticed. There were more women in it. Mm. There was more sort of female input. Mannering has a wife who is seen. A very young Wendy Richard appeared. Like,
Yes, she did.
Oh, that's Wendy Richard. Wow.
No, I think David Croft was very keen to have a completely male cast, mm-hmm. and it was actually Michael Mills, who was a commissioning guy at the BBC, who said no, hence the reason why you had Janet King in the first episode as well. It's going back a long time ago now. But this one, yes, it does. It has a few female characters in it. Walker, I thought, again, put Mannerin in his place quite well. And that doesn't happen very often. I'm thinking particularly where Walker was saying, well, actually, I'm not in uniform and I'm not on parade, so I'm just going to have my dinner. And again, it wasn't an overtly comic line. It was just something that he mentions, and Mannerin didn't have any kind of comeback.
I suppose it's good for their character development, but it wasn't... It was not especially funny, whereas in the episode we saw before, there was much more that was overtly comic.
Yes, yes.
And that was, I have to say, my objection to this episode. It really, for me, it really wasn't very funny.
It's strange because I think I liked it for the same. I think I liked it for the same reasons you disliked it. And I've always gone for the slightly more straight, more serious episodes. And you're right, this is much more. Straight. Well, is it straight? It's not completely straight because obviously there are jokes all the way through it. But I think again the war is portrayed quite well, particularly later on in the episode where you have the desert scene. Although I know that's quite funny, but I think there are some episodes where it's just a complete farce. And when I was trying to select an episode for you to watch, I actually thought, no, I'll steer clear of those ones. Perhaps I should have gone for them.
Well, no, because this is what it's all about, isn't it? Discussion and how different people view things differently. I mean, you can always get me on a bit of innuendo. There's quite a nice one about the toad in the hole. Oh, that can be very nasty.
Yes.
He's got the toad in the hole. I mean, it's that sort of thing. I wouldn't like an episode crammed with that, but that kind of thing. There's a lovely line at the end... The colonel was upstanding, but his wife was unfortunately not so upstanding.
Not so upstanding. One of Jones' lines.
Yeah. Can't deliver it. And the way he delivers it is a good one as well. Yeah.
I think Clive Dunn is brilliant in this particular episode. Listeners will be surprised to hear me say that because I usually hate Jones' character because I just don't think they know what to do with him when he's not taking the limelight. Where this whole episode was based around Jones's activities in the wartime, and I think his dialogue was good, had slightly more lines than usual, and he delivered the lines really well.
And I was fascinated to see Clive Dunn as he really was at that age, because he was then so well known for playing older people that in flashback, of course, and I have to say it wasn't me who worked this out, it was my husband who digged me in the ribs and went, that's how he must really have looked. Do you realise that?
He did. I mean, it was strange to see Clive Dunn without grey hair.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe they tried to make him look a little bit younger than he actually was at the time, because I think the character's age then was supposed to portray a very young, to be a very young Jones.
From a scriptwriting point, sort of looking at the writing point of view, we have our
yes, listeners, in case you're wondering what that noise is, we've got roadworks outside and we're just going to carry on. So if you hear the strange noise, we're very sorry.
I'm afraid to turn that noise off instead of put that light out, really. But I have a suspicion from the way things are written, whenever any series starts to go into putting the characters into a very different mode to the one that you expect, because I think that comes to the point when the writers are perhaps searching around for something different to do. Red flag rises. Also, maybe actors are saying, we're actors, we don't want to get typecast into being this person or that person, give us something else to do. And there's a sort of artificiality. I mean, I wouldn't apply this just to Dad's Army by any means. It happens in all sorts of things from Star Trek onwards. But I have a suspicion whenever that's done.
I think you're right. And when you've got a number of episodes, I'm trying to think how many episodes they'd done. There was 6 episodes in the first 2 series, and it was 13, I think, in series 3. So they've done a significant number of stories, and I think you're right, they probably reached a point where they thought, well, let's stretch the standard format a little bit. And I think it works, I have to say. I really enjoy having a slightly different episodes, and especially when they do mix it with giving the actors a little bit more than just farcical lines.
Normally I do, and it's a nice little exercise. I think I have a problem because, and you're going to say, well, you did know it was Dad's Army, but I have a problem because I even if it's just like simulated, I don't like watching anything to do with battles or people killing each other. Most of Dad's Army, from what I can gather, is actually about the home front and people and relationships. And
it's got not very brief allusions to war.
You know, not a lot of killing, basically. And I don't, even if it's fiction, even if it's not real, even if it's on the television, I just don't like it. So I find that before I even start, that is a barrier for me. to be able to laugh at anything, because I'm thinking, well, I know this isn't real, but for somebody this was real, and that would have been horrible. So I've got that in my mind before I even go start to laugh.
It's interesting, because the first episode we reviewed together, The Enemy Within the Gates, was far more rooted in war than this one. Mm-hmm. And I think it took the war more seriously as well.
I know.
Whereas, so it's interesting, because you enjoyed that one, and this one has had a harder time winning you over.
Yeah.
Okay, well, moving on, into the second scene, which is in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of interesting points here. When Private Clark is introduced, who's played by John Cater,
mm-hmm.
Fraser says he met him in the Anchor Pub. Now, the Anchor Pub was one of two pubs that the cast actually stayed in Thetford.
Oh.
So, now, it could be a coincidence. The other one was the Bell Hotel. But just over the road, when that hotel was full, they stayed in a now sadly derelict hotel. I think it's due to be knocked down quite soon and developed. But that was called The Anchor. And the very first scene and the very first episode in Dad's Army was filmed in that hotel. So it's possible that that was done quite deliberately, so that it was called The Anchor Pub. But that's a complete aside to the story here. I think that the thing that was quite prevalent here was how quick Fraser was to judge Jones, as he always is. And that's a staple character trait that continues throughout the entire run of Dad's Army.
But if he hadn't have been, they wouldn't have had the chance to do the flashback. I mean, he had to be so that they constructed the episode like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, he's a troublemaker. I think someone called him a mixer in this. I can't remember which character that was. But certainly he was very quick to leap on the fact. In fact, especially when you see Fraser on the telephone.
Yes!
And again, that scene happens two or three times throughout the entire run. You just hear Fraser on one end of the telephone. And I think he's brilliant.
I actually thought that was a really clever way of showing his character and the fact that he was spreading malicious gossip absolutely everywhere very yes. fast. I mean, if I had something I really wanted people to know, I think I'd tell him.
He's a bit like lighting a strategically placed fire and then the entire building goes up. Yeah, no, he's. I just think John Lurie pulls that kind of soliloquy off really well when he just sits there and talks on his own into the phone, and you see his eyes, and especially at the end when there's no smoke without fire, and you clearly see that small little scene sets the basis for Jones being, or receiving hate mail essentially, and feathers and so on. That moves us on to Jones when he was actually opening the letters in his shop, incidentally brought to him by the boy Raymond.
Yes,
who is frequently referred to as an actor called John Ash, and I think this is one of only a handful of times you see him. But usually Raymond is referred to, but he's never seen, or he's out of shot in the scene that he's supposed to be in.
Oh, he's sort of like Fraser's sister-in-law and Fraser, kind of.
Yes, he's in this scene, and I think it works. I think it works quite well. I think Clive Dunn's acting again is, you know, indignant at the fact that people really do believe him to be a coward. And this story shows him to be quite an upstanding character. I can't quite remember whether this is moving on or going back, but this is in the scene with Manuin in the shelter, his air raid shelter,
yes.
with his wife. and again, it's one of the very few times that you actually hear Mrs. Manuin. In fact, I think it might be the only time you actually hear Mrs. Manuin, because she groans when she's half asleep.
I think it's very interesting that if that is the only time she's groaning, because even in the first episode I thought, if that man has a wife, she's very long-suffering.
Yes.
She comes in and she groans. I think that's very appropriate.
She was. Well, again, you didn't see her, but this is the only time that I'm aware of that Elizabeth Manuin gets a credit at the end, and she's credited as an actress called Parnell McGarry. And I've no idea who that is, or whether he or she went, because it could have been a he, you never know. Parnell was not a particularly feminine name, I really don't know.
No, it's not actually a name I've ever heard as a first name not before.
I just thought that worked quite well, and again, he's very typical of the relationship Manuin has with his with his wife. Moving on then to what I think most people remember this episode for, and that is the flashback sequence. where you have all of the regular cast taking on different characters in Jones's story. The actual characters themselves, you had Ian Lavender portraying an officer.
Which is very different to that which he normally does.
I think he pulls it off really well as well. He came across very convincing, I thought.
But this is the thing, because that's what I mean, which makes me suspicious. Whenever you have that kind of scenario in a TV thing, the actors are always given something very different to do to that which they would normally play. And it's in the guise of, oh, let the audience see something different. And I just suspect it's not. I suspect it's for the actors.
I appreciated it a little. I mean, it wasn't done on all of the characters. I think Walker, who was named as Green, was described as a Cockney private who kept his spirits up, which can be said about Walker as well. Yeah. So I don't think that was a complete departure. Mannerin, again, with the dubbing on of the raspberry noises. Which I thought was all right occasionally, but it didn't make me laugh throughout.
Sort of sat there. I'm really sorry, because I really wanted lots of good things to say for you.
No, I think it's interesting to find out why some people like things and why the same thing doesn't work on for other people. I wondered where it was filmed.
Conversation about this, and we reckoned it was sand dunes somewhere.
It would have
to
be on a beach, and bearing in mind they always recorded their external locations in Thetford. They weren't that far from the Norfolk beaches.
Coast.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, it's probably something I could easily find out just by looking up in one of the Dad's Army books. But I thought it was realised really well, to the point where it was intercut with, I think, stock footage or perhaps some footage of genuine battle scenes, I think, from other films. It intercut quite well. You didn't get the sense that it was just a cast on their own down there. Perhaps as the series got more popular, they had a larger budget, perhaps, to film on location some more. I think our discussion wouldn't be complete without talking about Hodges a little bit, who comes into play only, in a very minor role, really. But I thought he was quite funny in both his dervish persona, and also his, which he carried forward exactly.
Putting the lights out, it's a very nice thing.
Which was excellent.
That's a nice thing, yes, I have to say.
I thought that was quite neatly done, and a very good idea. And of course, we haven't actually spoken about Private Clark, which, again, the actor I referred to earlier on, John Cator, I don't know a terrific amount about, but I thought he was a fairly convincing new recruit, and I remember, this is one of the very few Dad's Armies that I do remember watching for the first time, and I didn't know anything about Dad's Army really at that point, and I wondered whether or not this really was another introduction for a new character. And I thought he played his part quite well, particularly when he turned on Jones, when he tells him that he remembers him very well.
It certainly wasn't obvious what was going to happen, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Okay, so lastly then, I just need to ask for your score. Well, I've done over, I should do now. But out of 5, what would you mark this episode?
2.
That's the biggest difference. I'm going to mark this a 4. It's one of my favourite ones.
Oh, no. Anyway, but that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah. Anyway, thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you for
putting yourself through half an hour of torment and then talking about it for 20 minutes.
No problem, anytime. Thank you.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with your host, James.
That's it for Podcast 24. Thanks to Claire for joining us to discuss 2.5 Feathers. It sounds like she didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much as the previous episode she helped me review. Always good to hear a different opinion every now and again, though. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with Podcast 25, where I'll be bringing you some coverage of the 40th anniversary event being held in London at the Imperial War Museum. So hopefully I should be able to get a good few interviews with perhaps a few cast members and maybe one or two surprises. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us or request an episode that you'd like us to discuss in the future, then our email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com, and we'll speak to you again very soon. If you think old England's done. You have been listening to the Dad's Army Podcast, episode 25, with your host, James. The Dad's Army Podcast is free to download. The owners make absolutely no commercial gain from it whatsoever, and there's no infringement of any kind intended. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show and you haven't fallen asleep, and if you have, please prove it to us by sending us an email, james@dadsarmypodcast.com.